Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's almost time for Crosstown, baby. Both the Cubs and White Sox off today as they prep for a three-game series on the north side. Cubs flying high after a sweep of the Miami Marlins, mashing seven bombs, scoring 31 runs in three games. Meanwhile, White Sox have been let down by their bullpen over the last two games. Southsiders have dropped five in a row, nine of their last 10, blowing big leads late against the Pirates. Two teams having very different weeks headed for a crosstown showdown. We'll break it all down. Sports Talk Live next. And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show, he is the one and only Seth Gruen, the Tribune's lead columnist. He is David Haw. And from the score, he is David Schuster. All right, let's start with some crosstown talk. Cubs and the White Sox will battle tomorrow afternoon, first of three at Wrigley Field. White Sox knew coming into this season it was a rebuild. The Cubs believed it was a championship possible season. Two teams headed in opposite directions as the Sox travel there. But still in all, for the fans, not the players so much, for the fans, it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, no doubt about it. I think that this is just what the Cubs needed this week after the Marlins series. You play another team really, really struggling, and the White Sox can't find ways to win. But, you know, the thing is, this season, Sox fans understood this. They've embraced this. So you go into this series, and there's not that animosity. There's not, you kind of know what's going to happen, and you've accepted your fate. And it's going to be fun to see some of the matchups.
It's probably lost a little bit of its luster over the last few years.
Not a whole lot of buzz.
No, not a whole lot of buzz at all.
Come on, Dave.
you want me to hype it up here? Well, as long as the rain stays away, I'll be very happy. But... you know, obviously the two teams are going in opposite directions right now, and the Cubs are coming off a series where their bats came alive, obviously against Miami, and the White Sox, unfortunately, a couple of downers here the last couple of days against Pittsburgh. But listen, you never know what could happen in the games tomorrow, so hopefully it'll be some good baseball.
I've always thought that this series is more important to Sox fans just because they don't like playing second fiddle in the city. To me, as somebody who's been a Cubs fan all his life, Cubs-Cardinals has more juice to me. I care more about those games than I do this. But that said, it's still fun. It's a great atmosphere. It's as good as good an atmosphere as you'll get during the regular season, except for Cubs-Cardinals.
Yeah, but I look at it and I go, this has nothing to do with the Sox struggling where they're at right now in their rebuild, or the Cubs having these level of expectations. How can you have what's called a rivalry when there's really nothing at stake? I mean, you can look at the end of the season and go, okay, it was no more important than six games against Kansas City.
Well, the rivalry's geographic.
It's fun for the fans.
Yeah,
it's my brother's
inherent.
A Sox fan. I grew up a Cub fan.
Right.
But for the players, it's much more the Cardinals.
Yeah, definitely. The players 100%. Don't pay probably much attention to it. They're just another team. It's also May. It's odd that they're playing this early in the season.
And then they're going to play in September.
Late September.
And this isn't the September you want the Sox to be playing the Cubs necessarily, because it's not going to mean anything. I mean, the Cubs will likely welcome the Sox in September.
The Cubs could clinch on the south side some capacity. It could happen those nights. I mean, it's the end of the season, so that would be
weird.
You want
them playing in September when both teams are good.
No question. Here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Pretty simple. Is Cubs versus White Sox a rivalry? Yes or no? Now, what I propose, I would like to see baseball realign the divisions, and I want the Cubs and Sox in the same division.
Commissioner Cap.
Yankees, Red Sox.
That's interesting. I'd certainly like that. That would be the implication would be that you'd have either the DH or the pitcher hit throughout baseball, which I do like. Having them in the same division, that's something that's never dawned on me. I certainly like the geographic rivalry between the Cubs and the Cardinals. I go back and defer to that.
How about if it was a division of Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Twins, and Royals?
And you played each team like 18 times. If the Cubs and Sox played 18 times a year,
we got a rivalry.
The Sox attendance would not be what it is.
Correct.
And Cap, here's another reason why it could happen somewhere down the road. Baseball is always looking to cut cost. Think about how that would cut the travel cost of all the franchises around baseball.
Cap, it's not a bad idea, Commissioner.
And you go to the East, you've got Yankees and Red Sox and Orioles and Blue Jays and Phillies.
And how about that Miami-Tampa Bay rivalry? Wouldn't that be massive for baseball?
Yeah, that would be a weak division. You'd have Miami, Tampa, Atlanta. I don't know who else you'd throw in that division, but maybe Baltimore
goes there.
I don't
think they're going to mess around with the tradition, though.
Yeah, I doubt it.
You know, that seems...
Well, what tradition? They threw tradition out when they started interleague play. When they brought a DH, all that went away. I personally want the DH in both leagues. Or get rid of it. That's never going to happen, so bring it in both leagues. Do this type of realignment? Oh, man.
Listen, with this commissioner who's already got some radical ideas, I wouldn't put it past them to at least have it on the drawing table at this point.
Can you imagine if 10 years from now you went in, it was Cubs Sox, it was a division game, you could go to the window at the ballpark and make a bet on the game. That's coming. Adam Silver's already
100%.
Said they want 100%. 1% fee to them, and you can walk right into an NBA arena and go, give me the Bulls -6 tonight. That's coming.
Well, yeah, there's too much. Yeah.
It'll be totally different. You know your wife is from Scotland.
Okay.
It's all over in Europe.
Yeah, I mean,
you can go to the soccer stadium.
That seems radical right now a little bit, though.
Betting?
Not betting, but to be able to do that. To treat a baseball game like a horse race.
But you do it at soccer games over there.
I don't.
You do, yeah, you do.
I wouldn't have a problem with it.
We're not over there, though.
I think you talk about revenue streams, these leagues, the government, they're leaving money on the table.
So after you place a bet at the window, then do you meet the runner in the hallway who goes into the clubhouse and feeds the pitcher who's starting that day? You know, I mean, you're one step. You have to watch that stuff,
too. I went to the Manchester United game, and I walked in, and Garrett and I said, okay, we're betting who scores the first goal. He had one guy, I had another, and we bet Man U. And when we won, we didn't win on the goal, but we won the game. We walked over to the window. It was like a currency exchange. Here's my ticket.
Well, look,
there's my $200.
Were any of the players in line with you? Just out of curiosity.
Exactly.
So you want gambling to cure baseball's boredom issue?
It would. And I want gambling to fix, like, the state of Illinois. We are the most messed up state in the union.
Right.
Whoever runs our finances is a joker. And so now you got a chance to bring billions of dollars of revenue in.
Look at the camera when you say that.
Yes.
Okay, the teleprompter's over there. State of the state address with David Kaplan.
Yeah, the state of our state is a joke. Whether it's Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. They're all out of their minds. All of them. They're out of their minds. So I'm giving you a scenario to bring tens of millions of dollars and interest in the sport.
It's not crazy.
But it would enhance the sport, especially baseball, 100%.
It would enhance it?
100%.
Yeah. I don't know. 100%. It would enhance interest in the sport.
No question.
I don't think it would change the sport itself.
Well, we're talking about interest. We're talking about eyeballs on the product. The NFL is the beneficiary of fantasy football.
True, but I think there are two things in play here. But I don't mean to interrupt. But I think it would enhance interest because gambling enhances interest.
No question.
We're talking about the sport, pace of play. It's still got to be more. That's a different issue.
To watch it
has to be interesting.
More than just the gambling.
I
personally think gambling is the cure-all because football's got plenty of breaks. You've got maybe 8 to 10 seconds of game action followed by a 40-second play clock.
Three hours. That's it. That's your investment. You know when the kickoff at noon, it's over at 3:15. With baseball, you have no such guarantee.
You don't know that in college football.
Right.
Game without a clock
but these
is
Sunday
really
night,
hard.
I'm sitting up. It's 12:45 when that thing ends.
Like, come on already.
The college football games go forever, too, and people watch.
Let me ask a question of everybody here. There's always a con to a pro. What is the detriment, if ever there is gambling, in baseball? Tell me what the detriment
could be. Well, I think the gambling, the detriment is that there are people that don't want to expand gambling of any sort.
Well, that's one.
Some people can't control themselves.
Dave, you asked that, and the answer is corruption.
That's correct.
Corruption, because you don't want to expose. You know, why is there not a team in Las Vegas? Because of the you're closer to temptation. You're closer
to corruption. But now you've got two teams in
there. Well,
it's
a different era. Because you're gradually moving toward that. But I'm saying, generationally speaking, the answer to the question is you don't want to tempt these players or coaches or whoever has an impact on the game to having their hands out and
But I'll say this. Certainly,
security would actually have to be raised 1,000%.
No question.
And certainly baseball's been scarred more by gambling than, say, the other professional sports, namely with the Black Sox and Pete Rose. But you even look at college sports where they're not paid. There hasn't been a point shaving scandal in some time now.
But and the other thing you got to remember is you guys are saying, oh, boy, we better up the security. Dude, I can make a bet off my phone at any time I want.
They'll have the money to up the security,
It's already there now. We're already there. You can bet anywhere you want. You can be rolling down the Edens and go,
Oh, I'm going to play that basketball.
So did you take the over on the Bears 6 victories this
week? I'm going to. Okay. Absolutely.
Just checking.
I am all in on that. All right, it's no secret that Yu Darvish is off to a very poor start with the Cubs in 2018. Theo Epstein came to the defense of Darvish this morning. Here's Theo talking about his beleaguered starter on 670 The Score.
The headline is that, you know, Yu Darvish has had a very typical first month for a free agent, you know, and some guys hit the ground running and win everybody over, but that's pretty rare, you know, and if you just kind of look no farther than John Lester's first month in a Cubs uniform. It's kind of eerily similar. The one difference being that John's stuff was actually down a little bit that month, and Yu's stuff is still strong. It's just trying to put it all together and have him get really comfortable and have everyone else be comfortable understanding what he does well and how to put him in a position to succeed. So it's a process. I think we're getting there. Obviously, we would have liked to see better results early, but it doesn't always happen that way. I think as long as he's healthy, which he is, and continuing to try to get after it to win games for this club, which he is, and as long as the people in that clubhouse still buy into him 100%, which they do, then I don't have any long-term concerns.
And here are those stats that Theo mentioned. Darvish through 6 starts, Lester through 4. There you go, 0-2, 0-3. The ERA both in the 6s, a little higher for Darvish. Opponent's batting average higher for Darvish. OPS allowed a little higher for Lester. Batting average on balls in play, both those numbers should come down, especially Darvish's. And then the K to walk rate, those are obviously John Lester's numbers in 2015. And then we know where that went.
Yeah, you know, I give Theo a lot of credit. He handled that like you want your executive to handle it. You want your executive to go out there and defend the signing, to be there for the player. Theo's there when times are tough, and you applaud his, you know, the way that he handled that. Look, Yu Darvish, I've criticized him. You've criticized him. A lot of people have. I think it's been fair. I think that when you have a guy that has struggled to the extent that he has, I use the word high maintenance to describe him. I think there have been moments where that applies. Theo has to, when he's talking and in defense of him, a lot of it is wishful thinking as well. You want him to snap out of it like John Lester did. John Lester, that comparison is a good one. I do think John Lester had a little bit more cachet and credibility when he came to lean on to get him through those tough times more than Darvish.
First of all, Theo is correct. I mean, it's such a small sample size. That's number one, obviously. The difference between him and Lester so far in my eyes is the fact that when Darvish has not done well, he has seemingly folded at certain points of every game. In the fifth inning in a lot of instances.
A couple times when he was rolling.
Yeah, I mean, the balk threw him off in that one of his very first games. The wind blowing out at Wrigley, you can definitely tell it bothered him in the last Walking a pitcher. There's been certain things, and if you go back to the ultimate game that he pitched, two games that he pitched in the World Series, that's not a reassuring thing to a fan or anybody around baseball, that at critical times of games, he seems to fold. Hopefully that's not the case going forward.
He's been small in the biggest moments of the game.
Correct.
I mean, and that, look.
That's a good way to put it.
And I don't mean to be glib. This is a mental thing. The difference with the Lester situation was that Lester's stuff wasn't there, and we know that a pitcher doesn't have his best stuff each and every start. Everybody's saying Yu Darvish's stuff
is
great.
That was what I thought was interesting about what Theo said, was that he was almost – In praising him, indicting him.
Correct.
Because he's there.
So, right? What does that mean?
I had Mike Barzello on this morning, mm-hmm. and he said it takes a lot to understand our scouting system and how they hand you a game plan. Hey, here's how you're getting David Haw out, and here's where the pitch has to be, and it's got to be right here. He said, and guys process the information differently. He said Kyle Hendricks for a while said, yeah, I'm just comfortable doing it my way. Now he's totally on board with the system.
Yeah,
he said they're not worried.
I don't necessarily buy into that for the reasons that David articulated. You're talking about a balk or walking a pitcher. That has very little to do with the scouting report and how you're going to attack
a player. Well, his point, though, was that they may tell you, hey, we're going to get Haw out with a slider here on 1-2, and he's used to throwing a fastball, and he's got to trust what they're telling him. No, I want to do it my way. And then it gets hit. He said it takes.
It sounds like an excuse. But I understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, I'm just relaying what
they're
he said.
They're looking for reasons.
Absolutely.
They want an explanation.
They want to validate what they did.
Yeah, look, exactly.
Guys have gotten over this stuff, but they also haven't. And I know that this isn't a simple one-to-one, but I think about Chuck Knoblauch, who all of a sudden couldn't throw to first and never got over it. I know it's not the same thing. I know it's different with a pitcher. But these things do wreck careers.
I don't mean to be alarmist.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we're there. I don't think the disabled list stint did him any favors reputation-wise. I think he comes back Monday. He's one start away from starting to, you know, turn his season around. You always say like one swing away, like the Cubs hitters did this week. Darvish has a good start on Monday. He can build on that.
Yeah, even in the last start where he gave up the home runs and the wind was blowing out, he still had 8 or 9 strikeouts in 5 innings of work. So his stuff is good.
He struck Arenado out at 97. Yeah, he still has good stuff.
But I think Seth was right. He comes up small in big situations.
Wednesday's blowout win was probably the best game of the season for shortstop Addison Russell. 3 for 3, a double, a homer. Both of those coming in the same inning. It was his first home run of the season and his first three-hit day since July 19 of 2017. He raised his slugging percentage by 54 points in just one game. So I ask you, first of all, he's the topic of our stat of the day today. And if you look at our Chevy stat of the day for Addison Russell, you know, he's a guy who has had big moments for the Cubs in the World Series, but his numbers over the last 12 games are very encouraging. A 386 batting average, OPS 984, slugging 579. One more that sticks out, batting average of balls in play, almost 450. You cannot sustain that. So that is our Chevy stat of the day. But I ask you, David Haw, is he the long-term answer at shortstop for the Chicago Cubs?
You know, before this year, you'd think, oh, gee, absolutely, but there are a couple things in play. No. The short answer is no. I think that, number one, I'm not sure he's the best long-term shortstop on this roster. I think Javi Baez is probably that guy, and you look at what he can do when he's hitting offensively and defensively. You know, he makes the spectacular. He's got to make the routine more often, but Javi Baez is that guy on the roster. And Manny Machado could be the guy who they go out, if not this season in free agency, obtain. And that's an easy decision to make. So, Addison Russell, congratulations. Good that he's gotten off to this start and turned things around. But I'm not quite sure about his future now.
It is amazing. You look up at the scoreboard after he had his 3 for 3 and on base 5 times the other day, and all of a sudden his average is up to 261. So he's on his way with the first home run finally. 2 years ago when they won the whole, enchilada, he was as clutch as any player on that team. I mean, he was fantastic.
Yeah, last year, RBI game in game 6.
It was just great. He came up clutch in so many different scenarios. Last year, obviously, stuff off the field. He was injured. This year, not off to a very good start, obviously. Let's give it some more time before we either bury him or praise him to the hilt.
I agree. I think of all these young Cubs players, he probably had the most unfair expectations levied on him. I mean, people compare Schwarber to Babe Ruth. That's kind of tongue-in-cheek. But,
right, but
everybody's saying that this guy's Barry
Larkin. Right.
That's totally unfair.
All right.
Go ahead. 2016, he had a pretty good year.
He was drove in 95 good. And hit 21 bombs.
We've seen flash in the pan guys before. But people are saying that even before he got here.
They were. That was what Billy Bean said to Theo. Congratulations, you just traded for Barry Larkin. Ian Happ's up and down season continues. He went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts in the series finale against the Marlins. That ugly stat line coming just a few days after hitting 2 home runs in Monday's blowout win. When will Ian Happ find some consistency at the plate?
Maybe get consistent playing time. Maybe it's hard to be a young player as much as they like. They have 5 outfielders and they want to play 3 spots. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get the consistent playing time.
Well, would you play him over at
no,
Albert Almora?
I'm not saying you should, but the question was, when will he hit consistently? I think it's going to take him to get 500 at-bats to see exactly what he has. I don't know if he's going to hit well enough in spurts to get 500 at-bats.
Agreed.
So it's a chicken or the egg thing.
I think he's going to hit consistently, if ever, once he gets traded to another team in the American League. I think he's an American League player somewhere down the road.
What do you mean by that? I mean, why is he – why?
Because he's also more of a DH. He's not the greatest fielder. I think he's more of an American League player in the long run. And I'm surprised, honestly, that the Cubs started the season with both him and Schwarber, to be honest with you, on the roster. And I think somewhere down the road at some juncture, one of them, and it's probably going to be Happ that goes.
Yeah, I agree.
articulate. I think Theo would trade his son before he traded Schwarber.
I agree with that.
Look, but you got to let young guys be able to work themselves out of hitting slumps. That's part of development. And as you guys said, if you don't get the at-bats, you can't do it.
He's not going to get the chance here. Yeah. Almora should play, if not every day, pretty close to every day in center field.
Like, yeah. Ball,
for defensive reasons.
The ball other night in the 4-3 win, first inning, ball hit the base of the wall. Albert Almora catches that in his sleep. Ian Happ may be the fastest runner on the team if you have a 40-yard dash. He's not a good fielder.
Yeah, it's about routes to fly balls.
I think it's really unfair to even put him in center field because, you know, outfield deficiency is part of his game a little bit. I think he's more of a left fielder down the road.
He had such a good spring. And he was so hopeful.
Well, first of all, don't ever fall in love with spring training. Please, ever.
Dave, but Chicago did. Well, and he did.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I will never fall in love with anybody who does anything in spring training.
I was not on an island thinking Ian Happ was going to have a good year. I thought he was ready to take a next step. He was going to be a breakout type guy.
And it's almost
he couldn't make contact.
It's almost unfair to him because, honestly, there's not room for him right now to play every day. He should be playing somewhere every day.
Right.
And I think ultimately it's going to be on another team.
All right. Former league MVP Derrick Rose spotted working out at the Advocate Center. And our post-game analyst Kendall Gill starting a campaign to get D. Rose back on the Bulls. We'll discuss the possibility of Rose being Chris Dunn's backup point guard next. And the Boston Celtics have been getting plenty of great point guard play in the playoffs. But up next, LeBron and the Cavs. Does Boston have enough with their injured star sidelined to get past King James? We'll talk about it on Sports Talk Live next.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world. Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Why can't I be the MVP of the league? Why can't I be the best player in the league?
This is my playground, folks. I don't want you on it.
Why?
Rose crosses over the fadeaway. Got it.
Let me step back and kiss myself.
Oh, my
MVP
gosh, it's
time.
Over.
Windy City Assassin does it again.
Feels like a very long time ago that Derrick Rose took home the league's most valuable player award back in 2011 for Tom Thibodeau. Well, the former MVP is back in the Windy City, and one of our very own here at NBC Sports Chicago wants him to stay here. Kendall Gill spotted Derrick Rose working out at the Advocate Center yesterday. Kendall thinks Rose would be a heck of a backup for the young Bulls squad. He urges Gar Pax to sign him. Okay, Kendall. I love you, dear. That might be the dumbest tweet you have ever sent out.
Okay, it's probably the most emotional. That's a fan talking. That's the emotion talking. That's his heart talking, not his head. Because, look, there's Derrick Rose. He's back in good graces with the Bulls. It's nice to see him there. It's nice to see him repair some relationships. But he does not belong on the roster.
No.
Totally not.
And I don't care if he's the best backup point guard out there. That sideshow moved out.
Well, it's
gone.
It's not even about the sideshow because you don't get there because you first have to ask yourself, how does this advance our agenda as an organization? It doesn't. He doesn't help this team develop into a
contender. Well, first of all, their backup point guard is going to be Cameron Payne.
Yeah.
And honestly,
I don't know if you heard,
from a basketball standpoint, I think I would take Derrick Rose over Cameron Payne.
Agreed.
But first of all, 2011 is a long time ago now. It's 7 years ago, and Derrick Rose is not the same player, obviously, as he was in 2011. The reason you've seen him at the Advocate Center, and it's not just yesterday, it's been for a while in the offseason, is that Jerry Reinsdorf loves Derrick Rose, and they still have a good relationship.
It's the NBA.
Yeah.
And the NBA. Is everyone sort of one big happy family?
Well, not totally, but, enough so. That he has the okay to go work out at the Advocate Center in the offseason whenever he wants. Derrick Rose will get a job with somebody, and I think he played well enough in the postseason with Minnesota to get some kind of deal. The Bulls are not going to be the team that
he had a good series. He had a really good series for the Timberwolves.
I just don't want the drama that comes along with
it. I don't think you have to worry about it. I think the only person who might think there's a shot might be Kendall Gill. And I think that was more, again, more an ode to Derek. He likes Derek.
I know Kendall. Kendall's a smart gentleman.
He knows this.
There's no way Kendall believes that.
I know.
It's the fan in Kendall.
It was fun.
And again, Derek was so much fun to watch when he was at the height of his game, but that's no longer.
Yeah, and let's look at the big picture, too. And I think what that picture represents is that here's a guy that left town under some very difficult, awkward circumstances and was sort of a symbol of what might have been. And there was some baggage and all those things. It's nice to see Derrick Rose smiling. It's nice to see Derrick Rose back in Chicago, you know, where he can take a picture at the Advocate Center and be a part of the Bulls, not family, but be welcomed there, right? In Chicago,
it was
hometown.
A feel-good thing.
Yes,
and a lot of those circumstances were not his doing. They were, you know, partially physical, obviously, and largely, I believe, a product of certain people who were around him and advising him. So I agree with you. It's good to see that relationship repaired. Although David, you alluded to it, he's always had a good relationship with Jerry Reinsdorf, but even with the city, to embrace it.
That's seeing that picture that takes you back. I mean, that was. It seems like another. Generation almost, another era.
It's unbelievable. See,
and that was only 2000, I mean, Dave, it was only 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's a 7 year itch.
But it seems like Derek, forever.
To me, Derrick Rose's greatest moment in that MVP year, and I remember covering this game, was when he had that lob pass, he went up with one hand and just slammed it down.
Oh, he was
that to me was emblematic
was
of how good he was.
So Casey Johnson addressed this in his mailbag on ChicagoTribune.com. If he doesn't get hurt, is his career better than what Russell Westbrook's? Does Derrick Rose have a better career than Russell Westbrook? If
I'd say no.
No, he's healthy. That explosive.
He was the MVP.
He was that explosive.
Youngest MVP ever, Cap, ever. Before the injury.
Hold on a second. You could make a case if you go back and watch that season again that Russell Westbrook was already better. Well, I'm not saying he is or isn't. I'm just saying you can make that case.
You also could make the case that if Derrick Rose stayed healthy and the Bulls built around him, they
might
get
have won
to the
a
NBA
title.
Finals.
Tom Thibodeau has told me. We would have won a title.
And if that were the measuring stick and he had a championship, if healthy,
then his career
would have exceeded Westbrook.
Might have.
Obviously, there's no right or wrong answer to this question because you'll never know. But the thing with Russell Westbrook, he is a more, I think I can say this, more complete player. He fills up the stat line with rebounds and assists. Derek was strictly a scorer. He never really had high assist numbers. He was magnificent that MVP season, and he got this city really into it.
I think that's true, Dave. You're right. It's almost incomplete, though, because we don't know what Derrick Rose would have evolved into had he stayed healthy. He may have rounded out that part of his game.
He might have become more complete. He was a sensational talent.
And he was so good.
And you and I have argued about this 1,000 times. He should not have been in that game for what little that's worth at that point.
Oh, please. Basketball players play basketball.
No, Cap, they –
Do you know how many blowouts LeBron James has
finished?
Were
they up 11?
Here's the thing in a nutshell, and we're getting off to a tangent. He had 5 injuries that season. He was the
what
franchise.
What were they up?
Yeah, he had the foot, the
hurt.
Toe.
11 points, right?
It was about a dozen points with about 70-some-odd seconds to go. After Doug had pulled the entire starters off long before that, he should not have been in that game. He could have injured it, obviously, walking across the street after the game. He's a franchise player. He should not have been in that game.
Yeah, completely disagree.
I know you have. We've done that 1,000 times.
Ben Simmons, despite averaging 14.4 points, did not have a great series against the Celtics. He made just 47% of his shots, including the now infamous 0-for-4 in Game 2. And Simmons turned the ball over almost 5 times per game. Did he hit a wall in this series, Seth, or he's just not that good?
Well, I think
I love him as a player.
Yeah, look, I think young players inevitably in the NBA do hit a wall. I mean, look at the jump in games. There's no you could say from college to minor league baseball, but when you talk about the elite professional ranks, you talk about going from college basketball to the grind of an NBA schedule in your first couple of seasons, and then to the playoffs. Yeah, I think it's possible he hit a wall.
Growth. I mean, for a young player as talented as he is, you think back to, I mean, in this town, you know, Scottie Pippen had to struggle in the playoffs before he hit his stride, and a lot of players have that example and that path. I don't think this does anything to Ben Simmons except for maybe motivate him more to do something bigger the next time.
They're going to take the next step, I would think.
Yeah,
as long as they stay healthy.
It's a process, Cap. I don't know if you've heard.
Right.
It's a process.
David, when you wake up every morning, love the process. We'll never forget that. So now that the conference finals are all set and after seeing the best rookies in the NBA perform in the playoffs, which young star would you rather have if you had to pick one? You could have Ben Simmons. You could have Jason Tatum.
or you can have Donovan Mitchell. Who are you taking?
Probably Donovan Mitchell.
I would take Donovan Mitchell.
I'm taking Jason Tatum.
I'm with you. God, I'm agreeing with you. I like Tatum a lot, and he's getting better and better the time.
He's just a stud.
They're all studs, but I think that, you know, Mitchell is a guy that reminds you a little bit of Dwayne Wade, you know, at times. He's just so complete at this stage.
He's a great talent. He is a great, great talent.
But Tatum is really dynamic, too. And, you know, Simmons, who, you know, is not a true rookie, but I think when you look at his all-around game, too, all three of those guys are going to be stars for a long time.
100% agreed. And don't worry about Simmons. He'll be fine. I mean, I've seen him too many times. I think he lost a little bit of confidence. And give some credit to Boston for how they actually defended him in this series. But he's got to shoot free throws better. He's got to get stronger. He's got to shoot free throws better because the ball's going to be in his hands a lot of times in critical situations at the end of the game, and he's not good at doing that. But he's an incredible talent, and he fills the stat sheet also.
Yeah, he certainly wins a championship, I think, before any of those guys. Philadelphia is going to win one at some point. Maybe it takes LeBron going to L.A. or something like that, but I think they win one.
I think if LeBron goes to Philadelphia, I think he's in the NBA Finals for the next half dozen years.
Can the Celtics beat LeBron and the Cavs?
No. I don't think so. I really don't think so. They're not healthy enough.
This isn't even a question to me. I mean, who would bet or pick against LeBron James in the Eastern
LeBron
Conference?
LeBron James was the underdog going in the Raptors series.
I don't care what Vegas says.
Look what he did to them.
Yeah, I don't care what Vegas says. I care about the last 7 years of basketball history.
I think the Pacers had the best chance of sending LeBron home early.
Okay, let me ask you one other question.
It's amazing.
Let's assume that they get by Boston. And let's assume that they beat Golden State to win the title. LeBron, with that dog meat roster that he's got,
great.
Does he then rival Michael Jordan
to win
a title with that?
I think that's a really will be the tenor of the discussion if that happens. And I think it's appropriate because this is a guy that you look at the supporting cast, and it's not there this year. But this is it would be his greatest accomplishment, his greatest championship.
Michael had that one retirement, you got to factor it. And I think what this run is emblematic of and what that would be emblematic of is how much better LeBron is than whoever you consider that second best player in the NBA. Because the gap between him and whoever that is certainly is greater than that
Kevin
of
Durant.
Michael and whoever else you thought was the second
Kevin
best
Durant.
Player during that era.
Curry?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, look at what he's doing.
James Harden?
Yeah.
He's a stud. He is. All right, we are going to take a timeout on Sports Talk Live. Anthony Rizzo was out raising big money for one of his favorite causes last night. We'll show you that, plus his eye-popping numbers in the Crosstown Series.
Join NBC Sports Chicago at Wrigley this summer for Authentic Fan Nights, featuring free giveaways, cheer cards, and live broadcasts in Gallagher Way before the game. For more information, including dates, visit NBCSportsChicago.com/CubsAF.
We never want a family to have to choose between paying a medical bill or saving their kids' lives. So we try to alleviate that and let them, a lot of families, just not have to worry about the finances, and also while donating to hospitals and still doing pediatric cancer research. So this is the most special thing in my life is this foundation and helping and giving back. So nights like tonight makes it all worthwhile.
That was Anthony Rizzo at his annual cook-off for cancer event last night at Morgan Manufacturing on the west side of our city. All the money from the event goes toward pediatric cancer research and financial support for families. Rizzo himself is a cancer survivor. He was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when he was 18 years old back in 2008. Okay, this guy is off the charts. They don't make him like this guy.
Yeah, I mean, you look at we all have dealt with athletes committed to causes and they make charitable efforts and things, but I think he's at a different level. I mean, certain guys stand out in terms of, one, he lived it, and I think you see that passion come out every time he talks about it. And just to see him in the past few months, I mean, from the park, dealing with the Parkland tragedy and his eloquence there and dealing with this, which is an ongoing mission for him, it enhances your respect no matter what he does on the field. I mean, that's a remarkable thing, is now he's starting to play well on the field, and he's a great player, but he's a better person.
Outstanding human being. I mean, for all the things that he's done. I don't know if he wants to go ever somewhere down the road into politics, but he's the kind of person that you would
Let's hope not.
Mm-hmm. Why? For what reason? Mean,
such an awful way to make a living.
Yeah, it's like,
well,
it's,
I'm just saying, if he wants to do some good for society, he's, by the way, he is doing good for society.
He is.
But if he ever wants to go into
politics, you have half the people that hate you.
Yeah,
and I don't think there's any reason to hate him.
There's lots of athletes, like you said, David, who have donated to great causes and worthy causes. But I think the delineation between those athletes and Anthony Rizzo is that this is what he plays for. You could tell this is what motivates him. I guarantee you what goes through his mind when he steps up, maybe not at every at-bat, but it certainly goes through his mind over the course of the season that if he can raise his profile, he can raise more money. You know, there are other athletes who play for championships, and that's fine. That's worthy, too. But you heard him say this. This is the most important thing in his life. He plays for this.
Their best player might be Chris Bryant. But the face of their franchise is Anthony Rizzo.
And the leader in that clubhouse,
and
too.
It's his clubhouse.
Everybody knows. Yeah. 100%.
Well, it fits his personality. You know, I think, you know, when we talk about the leadership, you have to be somebody, it's got to be part of you. And I think it's just, they are fortunate to be in a clubhouse. That dynamic works. Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, they get along so well. And Rizzo is the guy who's front and center.
You know what he really is? He's the Pied Piper. He's the Pied Piper in that clubhouse. He's the Pied Piper wherever he goes. He really is. Everybody follows him.
Giving back is Rizzo's favorite thing to do. You just heard him say that. But his second favorite might be playing in the Crosstown Series. Take a look at these numbers. Anthony Rizzo career, .321, an on base of .439, a slug of .543, an OPS approaching 1,000, and 13 RBIs. That guy likes playing in those.
That guy likes to face that White Sox pitching, which resembles batting practice the last few years. I mean, and this weekend, no different. This is going to be just what the Cubs need after coming off the sweep of the Marlins. It wouldn't be shocking if they swept the Sox. And all of a sudden, look, they six in a row.
Look, they should sweep the Sox.
They should.
Not saying they will, they should. That's a team built to win the World Series. The White Sox don't have a bullpen because they're rebuilding. It's not a shot at the Sox. It's just two teams that are in different places right now. But while we look at Rizzo's numbers, how about Jose Abreu's numbers in crosstown play? He is a beast. Check his numbers out. 17 career crosstown games, .323, an OBP of .394, a slug of .548. Three bombs, eight knocked in, and an OPS also approaching 1,000. So the two first basemen getting it done in this.
Getting
series.
It done. And that's the ongoing. It's fun to have a debate when you have two first basemen that good and that elite. And you look back to Mark Grace and Frank Thomas, that debate.
It's been a lot of them.
There have been a lot of these
Derek
times
Lee,
we're looking at. Yeah, Derek Lee.
Paulie Konerko.
Gosh, yeah.
So
some amazing first basemen.
And this is another good debate. You look at the numbers, and they are similar. They're very similar career-wise. Abreu's had a big impact. But I think that because of the things we said earlier, you know, Rizzo's just been around longer, 7 years versus 5 years with Abreu. Abreu needs to have a big weekend for the Sox this weekend, though.
He does, absolutely. But that's how
Every
you
weekend.
Win. You get somebody that puts you on their back and drives in five, and you go, or four, and you go, whoa, what happened?
Here's another debate. Jose Abreu, and I really like him as a player, and he's been very consistent. But if the White Sox get the right offer at the trading deadline.
No shot.
No.
Okay, I agree. I don't think it's going to happen.
You can trade him. I think you need him for what you're trying to do with so many young players. He is a lead, he is to the White Sox clubhouse what Anthony Rizzo is to the Cubs. And I don't think that you can consider trading a guy like that.
I'll play devil's advocate here, though. We know it's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. It's about stockpiling prospects, and you know they're not all going to pan out. So if you have a chance to get another great haul, why wouldn't you?
You're
saying it's not going to happen.
Correct.
Why don't you think it should?
Because you're in a clubhouse with an enormous Latin American presence. This is your guy. I mean, you got guys there that don't speak the language. This is the leader of that group. You can't trade this man. He's a great player.
I get that. I 100% get that. But and that's important for right now. Is that going to be important in 2023?
Yeah, how old is he?
They better win before 2023. He's 31. He is reported to be 31 years old. So, you know, next 5 years, the next 5 years is the window, right? So you're entering what should be, He's going to have some decline later, but this is part. He's in his prime.
Yeah, he's a great player. There's no chance I would trade him. Let's get the results of our Ink and Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Is Cubs-White Sox a rivalry? Yes or no? 71% of you say yes. But I'd like to ask the question a different way. Is it a rivalry for the fans, or do you believe it is a rivalry for the team?
That wouldn't fit on the screen. That's a very long question, Kat.
It is.
It's no definitely question. For the fans.
Leave a message for David Haw on his cell phone. 312.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.